Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockiel, and today my guest is Mason Ginsberg, writer for Bourbon Street Shots. We're going to get into the New Orleans Pelicans. We're going to talk about the really fun, exciting playoff race between the teams in 5 through 9 in the West. We're going to talk about the trade deadline and God knows what else we're going to jump into. So, you ready to tip it off? Mason, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, I'm excited. I've actually been following you for a while. I've been enjoying your articles lately, especially when you're talking about how Boogie's not getting back in transition and all that fun stuff and the turnovers and all of that. So I've actually been really enjoying your stuff from afar and was like, man, I need to get Mason on.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. It should be fun.
Yeah, this is going to be a real interesting conversation because, you know, at the start of the year, and I went back and looked at the predictions on ESPN, on Sports Illustrated, on Bleacher Report. Everybody had the New Orleans Pelicans like 10th in the West, 11th. You know, nobody had them as a playoff team. Most people had their eyes on this being the first coach fired. Everybody thought Alvin Gentry was going to get fired. The whole story was, were they going to trade DeMarcus Cousins come, you know, close to the trade deadline? Was it a possibility that Anthony Davis was even available? And now, you know, the Pelicans are sixth in the West right now. We're recording on Wednesday just before they start to play. And they're kind of like the surprise team almost, but they don't get enough credit for that. Like, what did you think going into the season and kind of seeing how this season has evolved so far?
Yeah, it's really weird with them because people like to both simultaneously point to their, you know, they look at the Vegas win projection, which was around like mid to upper 30s, and then call them a underachieving team. This is before they reeled off these three in a row. Call them an underachieving team at 20-20, and it was just it was frustrating locally because that's kind of that was the national narrative. But I mean, but at the same time, they played a tough strength of schedule. Not top five or anything. That it's kind of fallen off a little bit. But it's still an above average strength of schedule. And you know, people are saying, oh, well, I thought AD and Boogie would you know, be able to carry this team to greater heights. And it's like, well, Vegas didn't think so. So all of a sudden, everyone thinks so. But I had this team around. I did the preseason podcast with Nate Duncan, and I said 46. And I thought that was maybe a win or two high, especially given the Solomon Hill injury. I think that had just broken like a couple days before that podcast. But yeah, so I had him around 45, and that's kind of where they're tracking to. But you know, especially the one thing we said, anywhere from 5 to even, you know, 10, including in the preseason, including Utah, 5 to 10, it was who was going to make it is who stayed healthiest. I mean, that's often how it works. I mean, we thought the Warriors, Rockets, Spurs were locks. The Timberwolves probably a lock, adding Jimmy Butler, and then Thunder too. But you know, the Pelicans, Nuggets, Blazers, Clippers, Jazz, all those teams, just one injury away from, as we're seeing in Utah, from just kind of falling off. And so kudos to the Clippers for keeping it together. But yeah, the Pelicans have, I think, at least, you know, from a Vegas perspective, they've exceeded expectations so far.
Yeah, and the thing about the Pelicans, too, is it's not like they haven't had injuries. You alluded to Solomon Hill before. Before we even got into September, like Frank Mason got hurt. I don't know how much he would have played, but
Frank Jackson.
Excuse me, sorry. And guys, just in general, injuries after, you know, just kind of piling up. You know, they just got the ESPN. God, the NBA just awarded them the disabled injury exception. You know, for Alexis Ajinsa. Like, they just constantly always have people who are injured, nicks and knacks. Rondo started the season injured and wasn't really ready to go right away. Yeah. But now you're looking at it and you're like, wow, like, first off, AD's playing at an unbelievable level right now. Just going over his numbers from his last five games, he's averaging 39.8, you know, 13 boards a night. Like, it's one of those things you look at and you're like, he should kind of get some MVP pub. I don't know if he'll be the MVP. I don't know if he'd win it, but he should be at least mentioned in the top five.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that the Solomon Hill injury is kind of, I think it's understated by a lot of people how important that was. Not because Solomon Hill's great, but because of how thin the Pelicans are on the wing and how he played 35 plus minutes a night for the Pelicans last year, and their defense was a border, it was a top 10 defense, but I think it was about ninth in the NBA in defensive rating. And so his loss was big. I mean, the fact that the Pelicans got Darius Miller to step up in the way they had this year on being such a good 3-point shooter and giving this team valuable minutes, a guy they pulled over from Europe, is huge. And so I do think that, you know, the Solomon Hill piece is kind of a key component, especially when you look at the Pelicans' defense so far this season. But I mean, with AD, he's been phenomenal. I mean, he's been great all year. I think in the start of the year, Boogie was kind of getting the praise because of the numbers, but it's been, I mean, you look at the on-off numbers, and it's been AD carrying this team all year. And I mean, the last few games, he's taken it up another level. But it's been, as usual, just a delight to watch him play.
Yeah, and the other thing too is they've improved shooting wise. You know, I think they were like 19th last year in 3-point percentage. This year they're 7th. You know, they've improved in that sense. It opens the floor up for those guys. You know, Cousins still shoots a ton of threes. Maybe just a couple more than I would like. But in general, you know, like, he knocks them down at a good clip. And, like, all of that opens the door for these guys. Like, I've been pretty impressed with when I watch them play. And it's funny because, like, watching them last night beat Boston, you just wonder if they can get Cousins to kind of care just a little bit more on a regular basis, I feel like they'd be a another level. Like, we talked about at the beginning of the podcast of him not getting back in transition defense, you know, and he's got a certain energy about him sometimes. It's not great. And you alluded to it in the second half of last night's game where he just didn't even seem that interested. But if you can get him going too, it's like, wow. This, I don't know if they're going to be much better than what they're at. And I think you're right, around 45 wins, but they got some, I mean, just the two of those guys is quite a duo.
It really is. And, you know, he can be frustrating at times, but, and harping on him, like, I mean, I feel like I tend to harp on Boogie a lot, and that's just because you see what he can be. And I mean, you see how talented these two guys are. And I mean, it's sometimes frustrating to watch, you know, him on defense at times, and just a little lackadaisical, gets frustrated too easily, and not in the sense of technical fouls, just in the sense of, you know, if he doesn't get a call that he thought he earned, then he's gonna maybe mope a little and take his time getting back down. And so, you know, we'll see. I think it'll be interesting, especially if this team can get to the playoffs, because Boogie's never been to the playoffs before. So how does he react? Does he, you know, does he really buy in? Does he change his game? I mean, to really make this team as good as they can be. And so that's the hope. I mean, that's kind of why they brought in a guy like Rajon Rondo to lead this team, and a guy that they know can take it up a notch in certain situations, like they saw in the first half last night. Not going to be a heavy minute player for the Pelicans for sure, but a guy who can help lead this team when asked, and can provide a few valuable minutes, you know, here and there. And you know, you brought up shooting, and it surprised me for sure. I mean, everyone before the season, people were pegging this team. Oh, this team needs shooting. This team needs shooting. And I didn't disagree. I thought they'd be about a league average. I thought they were a slightly below average shooting team that would be league average because of the spacing that Boogie and AD provided. And they've been top 10 this year. And it's kind of funny. It's like a barometer of how I can figure out pretty easily how much a person's paid attention to the Pelicans by, you know, if they say this team needs shooting, then I can pretty quickly tune them out, because they haven't been watching this team. They haven't seen what this team's done from behind the arc.
Well, I've been watching, so no,
I know you have.
I'm on top of that one. What's the impact you've seen with Drew Holiday? Because he also looked pretty good last night. He had some plays down the stretch too, where I thought like he made some actions, made some buckets in the overtime as well. I mean, that overtime went back and forth for a minute. It looked like, you know, the Pelicans were about to let it slip away, and he kind of came up pretty big for you. What are you seeing different, if you're seeing anything different, than how he played last year to this year?
I mean, last year he was once he got back from you know, thank goodness the procedure for her caring for her his wife with the complications with their newborn, everything was, you know, thankfully okay, but he had to miss the first month of the season or so, and after that he was great. He was putting up numbers not quite as good as this, but pretty good. And then Boogie trade happened, and it's just such a such a giant shift in the way that the Pelicans were going to play basketball, and it was tough for him. You could see it. I mean, the numbers dipped, and he was just, you know, trying to figure out his role in the offense, and that kind of continued for a little bit this season. And I think it was a combination of that and trying to learn the new wrinkles to the offense added in by Chris Finch, who was brought in over the offseason. But now that, you know, I think the entire team's getting more comfortable, the offense looks crisp, and you know, Drew's playing more minutes at point guard, and the team is great at point guard when he's in that role, which is, you know, I think that was a concern for the team before the season. They'd see him as more of a two guard. He's played well at two guard. He's played well pretty much regardless. But you know, ever since that first month of the season where he did start off pretty slow, he's been having a borderline all-star caliber season. Obviously not in the West with the kind of guards they have there, but I think earlier today I saw it compared to the Philly season when he did make the All-Star team, and the numbers are right there. And so he's been a really great third piece for this team, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I don't think people appreciate how hard it is when you make a big in-season trade like they did last year with Cousins. And, you know, that changes everything. And then how hard it is to kind of adjust on the fly, you know, right after the All-Star break to, all right, now we have this big piece in Cousins. How are we going to play with him? How are we going to work him in and things like that? Like, I don't think people appreciate how difficult that is to figure that stuff out on the fly and how rare it is. Like, I don't know how often I feel like teams that make a huge trade at the deadline, you know, kind of immediately jump in and have success. I think just off the top of my head, like Pau Gasol going to the Lakers kind of is one thing, but like I'm impressed with how he's played since then this season. Just kind of, you can tell, like, having a training camp, it took a while, he started a little slow, but he is finding his flow a bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at OKC this year. I mean, is the second, you know, once they put that final roster together, I thought they were the second best team in the league. That was defensive driven, because I look at the lineup of Russ alongside Roberson, alongside Paul George, Patrick Patterson, and Steven Adams, and said, wow, like this team's going to be maybe the best defensive team in the league outside of Golden State. And but the offense is just, I mean, they're still trying to figure it out. And so it's just, I mean, you change the team so drastically, even if you're adding in more talent than you're sending out, like Oklahoma City did this year, like Pelicans did last year. Just takes time. And so it looks like, I mean, knock on wood, because this team, you know, we'll see what happens then against Atlanta. Because, I mean, they were in this position very recently at the end of the December, and then dropped two straight at home to Dallas and New York. And so that's been the issue with this team's consistency. So hopefully they can put together their first four-game winning streak of the season tonight.
Let's flash forward just a little bit into the trade deadline first, and then off season in general. But would you move Cousins at the trade deadline? Now, there's been a little talk about AD, and AD kind of squashed everything. And then I think Alvin Gentry had the best quote. I don't know if you saw it. It kind of came up before I called you. But Alvin Gentry, was like, if they want me
to two plans one.
Gentry said, if we're going to trade him to Boston, we better get back the New England Patriots.
Yeah, and their two planes, I think, is what it was.
Oh, and their two planes. I didn't see the whole thing then. Okay.
Yeah.
But he says that, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, like I would never trade AD. But what's your thoughts with Cousins being a free agent this offseason? Would you move Cousins at the trade deadline, or you don't want to ruin a thing? Because good thing you got going here with this squad.
I mean, it depends. First of all, we'll just kind of squash it right now, and the fact that they're not going to trade him. They're going to give him I'm pretty sure they're going to give him a max offer in the offseason, and I'm pretty sure they think that he'll take it unless things really go off the rails in the next few months.
If
you look at the numbers, I mean, the team is not, the Pelicans are a better team with DeMarcus Cousins than without DeMarcus Cousins. Like, I'm not going to play around with that. But if you look at the on-off numbers and some of the other metrics, I mean, he doesn't materially change the success of the team. That being said, obviously he eats up a ton of minutes that lesser players would play. And like I said, the team is better for having him, but you know, could you replace him with lesser talent that fits around the center version of AD better and have a higher ceiling? Yeah, I think so. Does AD want to play center? No. Zach Lowe said it on the podcast with Simmons today. AD's been saying that for his you know, for his whole career. He doesn't want to play center, and that, I mean, that's why they gave Omer that contract years ago. So it's a lot, there are a lot of moving parts, and I think if you got like a grandfather offer from maybe like from Magic Johnson, the Lakers, and you, I mean, I would certainly entertain it. I don't think the Pelicans are going to entertain it.
Right. And then, so what would you do off season? Would you you said you think they're gonna try to max him out? You know, you look at it and you're like, okay, you got a ton of money tied into AD, and rightfully so. You're gonna have a ton of money tied into Drew Holiday, and now you're gonna tie a ton of more money into Cousins. Like, where can you improve the team? Like, what do you do in the offseason? Do you agree with the idea of maxing him out?
That's such a tough question. And so the Pelicans max is also higher than any other team could offer him. I think you have to, especially in a market like New Orleans, where I've mentioned this in multiple podcasts now, the best, since they moved to New Orleans in 2002, I think the best free agent they signed from a different team is Peja in whatever that was, 2006, 2007, who was awesome for 1 year in that great 2007, 2008 year, where they took the Spurs to seven games and I think were the best team in the West and would have lost to the Celtics in the NBA Finals. But, I mean, that's it. I mean, players just don't come to New Orleans. And so with that in mind, I mean, I think you have to do whatever you can to keep them. And so apart from that, you're obviously capped out. You're flirting with the tax line with Drew, AD, and Cousins will be making, $80 million between them. You've got to do something with Omer. You probably stretch him. You could stretch him relatively painlessly if you can't dump him on someone, because he has a $3 million guarantee in 1920. So it'd be stretching $14 million of salary over 5 years. So not too bad. And then you've got to do something with the last year of Agintz's contract, because the ownership group does not want to pay. Well, they'll pay the tax if the Pelicans are legitimately a contender or close to it. They don't have to be as good as the Warriors, but if they're just a first round exit playoff team, they're not going to even touch the tax line. And so they've got to figure out, they've just got to maneuver around minimum salaries, and even they can even use the mid level. But I mean, that's a conversation for a later date. But I mean, obviously with the on the books is, more for $9 million, which is a good deal. Solomon Hill for 12.75, which is not as good of a deal. So I mean, this is, they'll have a lot of questions and a lot of tiptoeing to do.
Yeah, I think you have to just bring him back, and start trying to figure out what you do next. Because I think the thing is he's too talented. You're never going to be able to replace that talent. I know what you're saying with the metrics and things like that, but I also know it's a tough situation to navigate. You're not going to bring in free agents, so it's all about who you draft at that point. And you have a guy, Cousins, and you're going to be able to pay him the most, so odds are you're going to be able to keep him. So I kind of think that's something like I lean towards keeping Cousins. I look at their chances, and I think they're a playoff team. I want to see them in the playoffs. I think Cousins and AD would be fun thing to watch. Who, with the news we heard with Kawhi as well, he's going to be out indefinitely. They don't think he's going to be out for the season, but there are a lot of question marks there. Right now, that's who they would play if the playoffs started today, and I kind of like that for them, and give them a chance to pull off the upset, especially if Kawhi isn't 100% healthy. Is there any of the other teams you look at where you're like, listen, everybody wants to avoid the Warriors, we get it, but you look at another opportunity of a team they might be able to upset in the top four?
I think I'm in the minority in this. I was having a conversation about it a day or two ago. But even with Kawhi back, I just think that the Pelicans match up better with San Antonio than they do with Bulls. Just because, and Solomon Hill might change my thinking if he can really be the bigger wing they need to help slow down a guy like Jimmy Butler. But right now, they're just, you look at their wings, and they're playing Drew at the two. But even when they're playing, right now their best lineup is Drew, Ian Clark, and Etuan Moore. And so that's just, they're in big trouble against a team like Minnesota. But if Solomon Hill comes back and can be that reliable, force on defense, and you have a closing lineup of Drew, Etuan, Solomon, AD, and Cousins, then you can start to convince me that they have a chance of upsetting Minnesota in the first round. But yeah, it's funny. We were having a conversation. Our group chat for Burma Street Shots, we're talking about what the ideal playoff situation is and whether you want to set yourself up to avoid the Warriors until the conference finals. I was just like, slow down a little bit. Let's just get the first, let's do whatever we can to win the first round. Like, I'm not trying to get the sixth seed instead of the five seed so I can avoid Golden State. I'm trying to find the best matchup in round one. If we can get a playoff series win, like, that's a huge win for this franchise, and that's the momentum. The first of its, the first series win for a bunch of guys on this Pelicans roster. And so I think right now it's San Antonio. If Solomon Hill comes back and can be a really strong defensive player and not a total wasteland on offense and can be playable for big minutes against Minnesota, I think that could be a potential matchup, but not until then.
Gotcha. Well, you're even putting the cart before the horse a little bit in the sense of they're not even in the playoffs yet.
Right. Exactly.
You know, the race between 5 through 9 is really just a difference of a game and a half, which is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. We have OKC at 5, and this is all as of Wednesday evening, before the Wednesday games began. So OKC at 5, New Orleans at 6, Portland at 7, Denver at 8, and the Clippers, who you mentioned earlier, man, have hung in there despite all the injuries. And, you know, Lou Williams has been amazing for them. You know, and they're just kind of the odd team out right now at 9, but they're just barely out, I think, by like half a game. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, and, you know, keep in mind, Portland and Denver have two of the tougher schedules going the rest of the way this year. You know, who do you think can possibly be the odd team out?
Yeah, and I'm gonna give my default answer just like I did before, and then I'll give a more nuanced one. But I think it's gonna come down to health. That's my expectation. Out of those teams, if let's say every team stayed healthy, I think the Blazers are the team that falls out. I like the Clippers roster a lot before the season. The Beverly season-ending injury is brutal because I think he's a really good player. But if they can get, you know, Gallinari back and you know, keep him relatively healthy for the rest of the season, I think that roster, especially the way Lou Williams is playing, as you said, is a very, very tough one. And I like that one better than Portland. Portland also can catch fire. But the strength of schedule component is also big. Denver, they're going to get Millsap back. They're going to be in the playoffs. Like, I would be shocked if they fell out. The Thunder, for obvious. And the Pelicans, I think they're in as long as they can stay healthy as well. So in my mind, it's picking between Portland and the Clippers. And I think I lean towards the Blazers falling out instead of the Clippers. But I think from a realistic perspective, I don't think the Clippers hang in there because I think they have too many injury prone guys.
Yeah, for me, I have the Clippers falling out. And one of the main reasons why I do is they have a nice long Grammy road trip coming up in February. 7 games, you know, it's spread out over the All-Star break, so it's not almost as true of a clusterfuck as it normally is. But, you know, 7-game road trip, they're 9-12 on the road. Granted, they've battled through injuries. And I just, from the beginning of the year, when they got Gallinari back, or when they did the sign-and-trade with Gallinari, when they got Beverly, when they got, you know, re-signed Blake, I just was just like, that's great. But all of these guys have a history of missing a lot mm-hmm. of games. And then yep. to start the season, Teodosic, who we were all excited for, I would assume. at least I was. I just couldn't wait for him to start.
I drafted him in fantasy basketball. I was so excited. And then he got the, was it turf toe or something? I don't remember.
Plantar fasciitis, you know, and then he was out for a long stretches. So I think there's just kind of like, it's just an injury thing that constantly follows this team and stays with them. And, you know, again, like, I look at their stuff, and the rest of this month is huge for them. They play Denver tonight. They play Minnesota soon. They play the Pelicans. They play Portland. Like, this is all before the end of January. All of those games matter to me because mm-hmm. they all matter for season series because that's the tiebreaker should they mm-hmm. tie with anybody. But on top of that, you lose those 4 games, you might as well just start looking to deal DJ at the trade deadline, because that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't have the tiebreaker amongst any of those teams, like, I don't have any confidence that you're going to make the playoffs. You know, there's not one team you have that chance with. So with them, I'm kind of concerned. And that Grammy trip is just so long.
Yeah, and so have you heard? I mean, obviously this isn't coming from either team. It doesn't sound like, but the notion of the Anderson and Capella for DeAndre trade is really, really interesting to me for a lot of reasons. And I mean, who knows if they've even remotely come close to discussing this, but I think that's one of the rare trades that might make both teams better. And so I'm very curious if they can pull something like that off. If Steve Ballmer is cool with paying the luxury tax, which you would, you know, you'd definitely be doing if you're paying Anderson, Blake Griffin, then re-signing your restricted free agent Clint Capella to a deal, then I think it's something to think about for both teams. And so, and given how much it's apparent that DeAndre would be happy to play in Houston with the rest of those guys, I mean, it's just really interesting to me.
I'm going to be honest with you, Mason. If I'm Houston, I don't do that trade. It doesn't. Capella is not going to command the money that DJ is going to command this offseason. I think I don't see it being that much of a difference between the two. Capella's younger. DJ's probably a better rim protector. But overall, I think Capella's in the perfect situation. He's the perfect center for that squad. He doesn't want the ball. He doesn't carry any, you know, free throw issues. He doesn't carry any baggage.
Oh, he can't shoot free throws either.
Did I screw that up? He's not a free throw shooter?
I don't think neither of them are good.
I'm going to pull up Capella's. Hold on.
Unless he got a lot better this year and I haven't been paying attention. But no, I mean, I like Capella a lot too, so I totally get where you're coming from. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I just find it very hard to believe. Oh, shit, you're right. Yeah, nope, I'm an asshole. He's a 60% free throw shooter. But I still feel like, just overall, like, you're going to get the same stuff you get out of DJ, out of Capella, and for a fraction of the cost, and not with the baggage. Listen, they could say whatever they want now, but DJ did not like playing with CP, you know, and now he might be realizing it more now that CP's gone, of like, oh man, I miss that guy. It's one of those things where, you know, you didn't know what you have till it was gone. And so I just kind of don't feel like that's a, I don't think that's a great idea, and that's a great situation. And now with the whole drama between the Rockets and the Clippers, I don't know if they make a trade. It was kind of funny though that it was like, after while this news breaks of the locker room breach, you know, heard around the world, DJ's out there going like, I kind of want to go play with CP. You know, like, that's not a good sign. But yeah, I have the Clippers out.
So anyway, sorry I took us off on that tangent.
But no, that was a good tangent. That was a good tangent. I love tangents. But I will say this. Whatever team does miss the playoffs, I have the best answer for them, Mason. I'm not sure if you're ready for this. But whoever misses the playoffs, they really should come to L.A. if it's not the Clippers. If you think it's Portland, they should come on down. And they should taste, quite possibly, the best gelato in all of the land. Okay? I have my friends over at Uli's Gelateria make the best gelato. They have two locations, one in downtown LA in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street, and the other location, which is a newer location, which I highly recommend everybody go check out. It's on 3rd Street by Crescent Heights, right by the Beverly Grove. You can't go wrong. Uli's Gelateria, and this will cheer up anybody who's in a sad mood, especially if they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, it's the right time of year, too. It's not like baseball playoffs where you're stuck in the winter.
Yeah, no, and listen, gelato's good every day, man. It don't matter if it's raining or cold. Now, granted, I'm in L.A., so I have a different perspective of weather than everybody else.
That's fair.
One thing I want to get into is the trade deadline's coming up real fast. Like, we're going to blink, and there it's here. It's been moved up. It's February 7th, I think, is the date this year. When you look at it, do you look at it as you're excited? Like, there's going to be a lot of... You think there's going to be a lot of movements, a lot of teams need pieces, and they're looking to make moves? Or do you think this is just going to be a lot of talk and it's going to be a very quiet deadline?
League-wide?
League-wide.
Hmm. I don't know. See, it's hard for me to say, but the one thing I'm really interested to see how it impacts the deadline is the fact this is the last year the draft is going to be the way it is before it moves towards this more kind of equal share for the for all the lottery teams. So I think you'll have a situation where the bottom teams are just like sell. Like everyone who has a pick is just going to try to do whatever they can to like make sure their odds are as good as possible for that. I mean, of course, the draft is also supposed to be great this year, so that's another reason to do it. But I just think even more so, like teams that are closer to the playoffs, you know, they kind of have crap odds for one more year, so do they just say screw it and try to make it? But I mean, like it looks like already you're having some clear lines drawn, and not to completely rule out Utah because they're a very formidable team with everyone healthy, but it just seems like they're too far out at this point. So like you've got six teams in the West that are maybe outsiders of the playoffs looking in, and then you got at least well, I guess Brooklyn has no incentive to lose, but the East is more interesting to me because you've got a lot of teams that maybe think they have a shot, including even Chicago, given how they played recently. And you never know what that ownership group's going to do. You thought this was a rebuild, but if they think they can even sniff the playoffs, maybe they try to go for it. So, I mean, I think you got at least a half dozen sellers. So, I think it'll be movement. I just don't know if we see any big names moving at this deadline.
Yeah, I don't see any big names moving myself. I kind of look at it as there are a lot of teams that would want to make moves but don't have pieces to make moves. Like Cleveland wants to get better. They want to make a move. But they don't want to trade that lottery pick. Like they don't want to trade the Nets pick. And if I'm them, I wouldn't trade the Nets pick. Like that's a tough situation. Like you don't know if LeBron's coming back or not. And like you alluded to, like this is a pretty good draft. And you know, everybody talks about how the Nets are, like that pick right now is like around 6 or 7, you know, but they're not that far away from it being, you know, in the top 5 either.
They're also going to get D'Angelo Russell back there, so I would think that team will even get a little bit better. So, I don't hate that Brooklyn squad.
Yeah, no, I like them. I could see it going either way, right? Like when they first made the trade, I was like, yeah, that pick's not going to be as valuable, and. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of where it's at now is kind of where I would expect it to stay. But there's always that chance, you know, just a tumble or something like that. The one team I kind of want to keep my eye on is Orlando. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see them start making a few more pieces available. If they ever free Mario Hezonja and you know, Orlando has a great history of trading somebody and then him becoming a player somewhere else. And maybe not a superstar or something, but being a piece like Tobias Harris is an example and so on. So I wouldn't be
Oladipo.
I mean, obviously Mo Harkless is a player for Portland that gets minutes. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Mario kind of take that thing. If I'm a team, I might even just inquire about Aaron Gordon and see if they're interested in moving him. I don't think they are.
I think that's probably the one guy they're definitely going to hang on to. I mean, I think they'll probably keep like Isaac too, since they just drafted him, but I mean, I agree with you about Orlando. Like everyone else, I'll bet is fairly fairly expendable. I don't know what Vooch's timeline is, but I mean, I would imagine how much longer is he out for? You know,
I don't know. I've barely watched Orlando. They're tough to watch, unless Aaron Afalo is throwing haymakers.
Yeah. Oh man, I almost missed that yesterday. That was something.
The NBA is getting weird, man. We're getting fights left and right, man. Like last week, it was Ibaka and James Johnson. I mean, if it wasn't for the whole Clippers Rockets fiasco, we'd be talking about Simmons ducking Kyle Lowry. And I mean, like, and then Aaron Afalo literally is throwing wild haymakers, and somebody needs to teach him how to throw a punch. That is a wild and poorly thrown punch.
Oh, man.
Maybe they shouldn't. That's not a good thing for the NBA. But like, I just think there's going to be a lot of teams that would have pieces they'd want to get. You know, would willing to move. But I just don't think there's a lot of good like stuff out there value to get back.
The guys I'm most curious about as far as the trade market goes is one. I mean there are four teams I'm looking at. One is the Bulls with Nico and whoever else they end up considering moving. I mean, I would assume everyone's on the table, Robin Lopez, Nico, even, you know, Justin Holiday, if the price is right. Atlanta with Deadman, probably Bellinelli, a couple other, maybe the one or two other guys.
Bazemore is mentioned.
But then the West is what's most interesting to me. The Mavericks and the Kings. I wonder about Wes Matthews, and I wonder about George Hill. And granted, especially in the latter case, George Hill still has a, I mean, both those guys do. West too has, they have massive salaries along with them, but they're both good players and they can definitely help a playoff team. And so, you know, George Hill is clearly, I don't know why he thought it would be any different, but he's clearly not happy with the 15th seeded Sacramento Kings. And I still think it's not like he got way worse than last season. He's 30, I think. He has very little salary guaranteed in the third year of that 3-year deal. So I think that's a piece. And, you know, we've talked about it. Is there any way for the Pelicans to go get, George Hill if they send out some of their deadweight salary and a pick or something? Probably not, but I think he's valuable. I mean, it's not like I said, he didn't fall off the face of the earth. It's just like he's stuck in a team that's clearly rebuilding. I'm not sure what they were thinking with him and Zach Randolph, but I mean, who knows? But that's another team I'm looking at.
I think George Hill's a great call. Like, that's a team. That's a guy teams should be calling about and asking and engaging kind of what his availability is. Because like you said, it's like the third year of his deal is, I think, $1 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
What's hard is he's making 20 now. So, like, if a team that's a playoff team is, odds are, is close to the cap or over the cap, like, they got to figure out how to get $20 million of salary out that's worth taking to get George Hill, you know? And I wonder about that and stuff. But he's definitely a guy worth looking at and keeping an eye on. I think that's a really good call. Overall, I think it's going to be I think we're going to get some moves. I think you're right. Maritich is definitely going somewhere. The Pistons are looking to move guys like Stanley Johnson and stuff like that. I think we'll get some moves, but I don't think we'll see a big name move. I don't think we'll see a high draft pick get moved. I don't think anybody really is ready for that. Overall, I think it's just going to be a lot of noise and a very quiet trade deadline. But let me ask you, who's Danny Ainge going to say this year that he had a deal in place for somebody?
Oh man,
it's a trade deadline tradition now.
Yeah, right. Jeez, I don't know who they. I mean, they're not gonna do trade. They're not trading for anybody. I mean, they're so good where they are with all the young talent they have, and Gordon Hayward coming back next year. I mean, they're not gonna mess with anything. I mean, I don't think they'll feel like they're one piece away from beating Golden State. You know, so. I think Ainge for a change is going to be totally cool, just not even pretending to be interested in anyone.
Mason, we can't ruin our tradition here, okay? We have traditions, okay? This is why we have traditions.
Oh, then it's got to – I mean, it'll be, what, DeMarcus Cousins? One of the Pelicans, too.
I was going to say he's going to have – I was going to say he had a deal in place for DeMar DeRozan.
yeah, so, because if Toronto's even touching that, he's having the best year of his career.
Let me throw you a wrinkle here. Try to throw you a curveball.
Sure.
You've seen a lot of it because you've watched a ton of Pelicans games. What's your take on the officials? Like, a lot has been discussed about how it's, you know, how difficult the officiating has been this year, and the player official kind of dynamic has basically just gone to shit. Like, what? From what you've seen, like, what's your take on this whole situation? I mean, you see it with Cousins screaming at officials every day.
Yeah, I don't. It hasn't seemed measurably different in my opinion. I mean, I think the nature of the beast, and everyone who wrote for Sacramento sites blogs told us the same thing. Like, get ready for Cousins to get kind of screwed over by the officials, because he's just a big. First of all, he's got his own reputation. Second, he's just a. Big guys tend to get, you know, if they come up against someone smaller than them, it's human nature. And so Cousins gets the short end of the stick on officiating frequently. And does he deserve some of the technicals he gets? Absolutely. But does he deserve to be pissed at some of the fouls he gets? Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't seen anything that different this season than years past. AD had a super quick fuse one game against Minnesota this year that you're not used to seeing from him. He got tossed very quickly. A bunch of emotions just boiled over, and that's not something I've seen from him before. But apart from that one game, hasn't seen any large degree worse than it has been before.
Yeah, I think overall we're just kind of losing the officials. Kind of how you approach officials is kind of a thing, you know, and they're people and they just kind of want the respect. Cousins is just, he has that mark on him. That's it. Him, Draymond, you know, those guys kind of have the I don't want to say a target, but they have the mark on it. And it's like, as soon as they start barking, it's just like, oh, God, I got to deal with this all game, you know.
It is interesting. I saw this today that Westbrook, Draymond, and Durant all have more technical fouls than Cousins this year. And that's just, I mean, you would never know it based on narratives. Probably maybe Draymond, but especially and I know Russ has had had issues with flirting with suspensions, but it's the reputations are just a little different. And so I found it pretty interesting.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing about it. And like Draymond, I think is going to end up with a suspension before the season's over. He's at what, 10 technicals already? And leads the league. So I won't be surprised to see him get to 17 and have to miss a game. Lucky for the Warriors, that all resets come playoff time. And hopefully, Mason, we'll be watching the New Orleans Pelicans in the playoffs. I really appreciate you coming on, man. Plug your stuff, dude. Let the people know where to find you, Mason.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I write for BermanStreetShots.com. It's the ESPN True Hoop Network affiliate, or for one of the few True Hoop Network affiliates left ESPN covering the Pelicans. A lot of good writers. None of us do this stuff as our full time job. So whenever people get busy with the real world, other people step up, and we have there's a lot of talent there, and a lot of people who really are really passionate about Pelicans and the NBA. So definitely come check us out.
Perfect, man. Mason, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it.
And that's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and wherever else you go to listen to your podcast. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.